Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Leaf Flag, the aftermatch podcast of the LFC Red Poets. Tonight, we look back at yesterday's brilliant game between Liverpool and the 115ers at Anfield that ended once again in controversy with the PGMOL and VAR coming into question at the end of the game. I'm your host, Les Lawson, and tonight I'm joined by Tom Keegan, Pete Warburton, and Ben Kent Jr. So, Tom, I'll start with you on this one. Let's turn your mind back to the 31st of August when the transfer window slammed shut. And you're looking at the fixtures to come, and you see that Liverpool are playing at home to Manchester City, you know, in early March. And you're thinking to yourself, you know, if Liverpool have a decent season, that game could mean something. And then somebody says to you, right, when Liverpool play Manchester City, they will be at full strength and won't have Jack Grealish, right? Liverpool will be without Alisson, Trent, Matip, Konate, Robertson, Thiago, Piszczek, Jones, Gravenberch, Jota, and you'll only have a half-fit Salah and a half-fit Szoboszlai. What would you have thought?
You would have thought, Les, exactly, you would have thought. You know what? You would have thought we were cased, and like, all the way through. But I think this team has taught me one thing this season, you know, this Liverpool side. Well, I'd write all the way through our podcast, all the way through, we've said, all of us have said, you know, if we're there or thereabouts come Christmas and the second half of the season, the way the fixtures pan out, we're going to have a great chance of where we are. And then the wheels came off, didn't they, with all the injuries. And like, this year, Jürgen has looked so laid back since he's made this announcement. And he's just got this group. So whatever team he puts out, this team will run through a brick wall for no matter who they're playing. And I must admit, I was slightly nervous yesterday about the Manchester City game. I think I texted you earlier in the day to say, is Konate fit? Because there was talk about him, he might make it. And I was thinking, well, if Konate makes it, we can move Gomez over to right back, and then we could possibly bring Robbo in. And then you're finding out that Robbo's not 100%. And then when you see the team, he's put Jarrod Quansah in, you're thinking, never in your wildest dreams did you think that, you know, we'd be able to turn a performance out like we turned out yesterday. And I don't think any of us really, when they seen the team, thought we were going to do what we did.
Pete, it's a testament, isn't it, to Jürgen Klopp and all the players in the squad that, you know, without all those players that I mentioned when I just spoke to Tom then, that Liverpool played against the team that typed as the best club side in world football. And yet, we outplayed them yesterday. For, you know, and not saying outplayed them as such, we were the better side. We outplayed them for part of the game. They outplayed us for part of the game, but I think on the basis of the 100 minutes or so that were played, I thought we were the better side without all those players. And it's a testament, isn't it, to the squad that we've got, that we're able to sit here tonight and say that.
I think we've said on previous programmes, haven't we, that we just have people, you know, and a lot of them kids, but we just have personnel that come in and fit into the system and do a job. And the only thing I was a little bit cautious about pre-kickoff was when I heard that Konate was unfit. And I'd said to the lads, I said, I just hope the Haaland doesn't bully Quansah. I said, I think Virgil's got to sort of look after him today. And I can't, apart from one shot, I think, in the first half, which was more like a back pass, I can't remember Haaland doing anything. And that's testament, not just to Virgil at the back, who's come back into form. Like, he's probably better than he was when we thought he was the best in the world. But the lad next to him, Quansah, yesterday, fantastic. And like I say, you've got Conor Bradley comes in at right back, and he has done for a few weeks. And, you know, there's people actually questioning, will Trent ever get back at right back? Because Bradley's playing so well. And it's just, you know, like you say, there was a catalogue, I think we were reading out. There was almost like a full team that was out yesterday. When you go through from Alisson right through, and you mentioned Bacetic and obviously Jota up front, and there's others. There was almost a full team that you could pick that were injured. And as I say, people come in and just personnel come in, and they just know what to do. You're not worried in any way. As I say, the only sort of thing I was thinking yesterday is I just hope they don't let Haaland play on Kwanzaa. And to be honest, I think Kwanzaa would have taken it in his strides, you know, the way he's been this season. So, yeah, it's testament to not just the first team even. When you go down the age groups, they all play the same way. So when they do get promoted to the next level, they know straight away what they're doing, you know.
It is sort of testament, isn't it, Ben? Because unlike, yeah, I wanted Dibu to be fit yesterday, but when he wasn't, you know, and Kwanzaa was in, you know, I didn't have kittens like he used to when he heard that Lovren was starting, for example. You know what I mean? So, although, you know, I thought to myself, well, you know, this will be a real test for Kwanzaa. I was quite confident that he could step up to the mark and do a really, really good job. So I don't know what you thought when you seen the side, because, you know, there was still, you know, the odd shock there, wasn't it, with Joe Gomez preferred at left back to Robbo. And to me, that wasn't a surprise after the way Robbo played on Thursday, when I thought he was, you know, not at the level you require for a player to come up against and play against Manchester City. He's not got his rhythm back yet. No doubt in Robbo's quality. But I thought that was the correct decision. I'm always happy to see Conor Bradley in the side. I was glad to see Szoboszlai get a start, but I must admit, I was surprised to see Harvey Elliott prefer to Cody Gakpo, let us say. So what did you make of it?
The only... I would have liked quarter to three yesterday when... Was it quarter to three when the team was announced? I would have... If I was picking the team, I would have liked two players to be in, well, two or three players to be in it that weren't. But I wasn't nervous about it. I think the last month has just taught me in particular just to have faith in what Jürgen's doing. He knows the players better than me. I think out of the team that I picked on Friday or Thursday, whenever we did the show last, I got nowhere near it. I was disappointed Mo didn't start. I did think the game was made for him. But Elliot was fantastic, and I think that was his best game in a red shirt by an absolute country mile. I thought he was brilliant. But Ibu and Kwanzaa, I don't think there's much in it, you know. I genuinely don't think there's much in it between them. Ibu's obviously ahead of him, but it's not night and day. Like, I've said it on this before, and I've said it to the lads a few times. If we would have signed Kwanzaa last summer, for £40 million, It'd be in the England team and it'd be starting for England. Can you name me a better English centre-half than him this season?
Well, Gareth Southgate will tell you Harry Maguire, so there you go.
Gareth Southgate's crap. There isn't one. There hasn't been a better English centre-half than Kwanzaa this season, and I don't even think it's close. Like, his performance yesterday was just majestic. Yeah, when the team dropped, you obviously have a little bit of apprehension because of the team that you're playing. And you obviously think there was so much riding on yesterday. And you think, with everything that's gone against us this year, decisions, injuries, and, you know, goals that were scored legitimately didn't happen, you think everything's against us. But the best thing about Jürgen is he just puts that on the back burner. It would have been so easy for him to use these injuries as an excuse and, like, the mindset of the team be negative, but it's not. If anything, he's galvanised the whole squad. And the players that have come in, Bradley, Kwanzaa and Elliot, they've been brilliant. You know, you wouldn't think there's much of a drop-off there. So fair play to them. And I think the team is the team. It was unfortunate that we didn't have the players that we couldn't pick, but so be it. It was what it was, and the lads did us proud.
Tom, it's fair to say that when the game kicked off, City started off the better. They kept the ball really well. We couldn't really get going. How worried were you at that stage that this wasn't going to be, you know, as we all hoped it would be? Or did you sort of think, well, you know, the lads are just needing to sort of work this out. When they do, you know, they'll start to impose themselves on the game?
A little bit of both, really, Les. I thought I think what they've done is they started using him forwarding a little bit, didn't they? An awful lot, and started exploiting, you know, Gomez not being in his natural position. And I think, to be fair to Joe, it took him about 15 minutes to sort of get into the game. He was skinned a few times by Foden. He kept looking for him and trying to pick him out. And I think, as you said, I think Liverpool at that stage started to press a little bit better, didn't he? They started to get a bit tighter to the midfield and started to cut the supply line off. And then you found that Foden was sort of wasn't getting as much of the ball as he was in the first 15 minutes. So I think you're right in so much as that. I think it took us a short time. And as what, I think what Ben said, or I think it was Ben or Peter, when you look at Virgil van Dijk was the only member of the back four who was, you know, probably would be classed as a first choice in that position. You know, like Trent would have been first choice. You would have had Konate, who would have been, or Matip alongside. You would have had Kelleher, Alisson in place of Kelleher and Robbo. So there was only Virgil. So putting in four new players to sort of and expecting them against probably, as you said before, the team regarded as one of the best teams in world football, you know, like, and the current European champions. I thought Liverpool did really well, to be honest, after they got over the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, Pete, we did start to come in the game at that point, didn't we? And as I say, we started to really sort of push them back. I mean, I was, just to go back a little bit, I was actually a bit surprised when I seen their side that Diaz wasn't playing the centre-half for them and he brought in Akanji. But I think that when you've seen them set up, you could see that the reason they brought in Akanji was he's got a bit more pace.
Yeah, I think
he wants to try and, you know, deal with Nunes, so to speak.
Yeah, I think Guardiola actually said that after the game, didn't he? He said they looked, you know, they second guessed that. He thought Liverpool would line up and with Nunes starting. They wanted a bit more pace at the back. But yeah, it took us a few minutes. Like you say, the first 12 minutes or so was pretty much all City. He put a couple of crosses in that whizzed across the box. I think they had a bit of a, not sure if De Bruyne had a sighter, and it just went straight down Callagher's throat. But after about 10 or 15, well, about 12 minutes or so, 14 minutes, I think Conor Bradley had a bit of a go from inside the box, and he fired it wide. And although the crowd were already up for the game, it really was like a catalyst then. And like you say, we started pressing them, and we weren't giving City, you know, much time on the ball at all. So we clawed our way back, really. And, you know, there was really some good movement. And then Luis Diaz had the goal disallowed for offside, which we weren't shocked by. I mean, from where we sit in the main stand, I'm down towards the away fans anyway. And the first thing I do, if it's up the cop end, is look for the linesman's flag, and it was up straight away. So it wasn't such a shock, but that was a good move. That was a very good move, to be honest.
It was an absolutely brilliant move.
It was just a shame, you know. But yeah, we clawed our way, and then we started asking questions to City then rather than the other way around. But like you say at the start, it was just a privilege actually to be there live at that game yesterday. It was fantastic. From both teams. But yeah, you know, give it 12, 15 minutes, and then I thought we started sort of bossing the game a bit, really. Especially in the midfield, Endo was fantastic yesterday. I mean, I think to a man, 1 to 11, you couldn't fault anyone's effort, and even the subs have come on. But we started bossing the midfield, and we started pushing City back. And you know, the one you've got to stand on and stop him playing is Rodri. He's the one that everything goes through for City. And then he picked up a booking quite early for him, didn't he? It was normally he gets a booking on 88 minutes after he's done fouls all day, but he got an early yellow card, so that was a good, that was in our favour as well, because he couldn't do anything too rash after that. But as I say, they just really played well yesterday after that 10 or 15 minute start from City.
Yeah, Ben, and it was just at the point where Liverpool were getting on top in the game that City basically won a corner. And from where we were, you know, in the cop, and you probably thought the same as me, when the corner first come in, I actually thought it had gone out into the side netting until they started wheeling away, and you thought, what the hell's happened there? How's that gone in? And then when you actually see the goal back, McAllister gets basically blocked off, you know, pushed out the way. Now, it's very similar to the incident in the League Cup final, but it's not the same, because the PGMOL's get out of jail card, that one was that Endo was offside in the Cup final, and he affected the play by blocking the run. This time, what they're saying is that because you can't be offside from a corner, then the blocker wasn't affecting the play, although he stopped McAllister getting to the ball. So, you know, they make their own rules as they go along. But, you know, we suddenly find ourselves 1-0 down, and all of a sudden you think, this is now going to be a real test of character for us to, you know, to stay in this game or get back into the game. So it was a bit of a worrying time, Ben.
I thought exactly the same as you, Les, when that corner went in. I thought, first of all, I didn't think it had gone in. I thought it hit the side netting or hit the adversaries and Hordens and gone, hit the back of the goal like sometimes it does when it goes wide. It was only when I saw the City fans celebrating, I thought, how the hell has that gone in? Because I didn't have a very good view of it and I wasn't expecting it. It was a foul on McAllister. I don't care if it was offside or not. It's an obstruction. And it was just an example. I can understand how the referee missed it, to be fair, but VAR should have looked at that and said it was a foul. But like you've said many times on this podcast, you have no faith in them. But fair play to De Bruyne. It's an example of why City is such a good team. I was watching about an hour ago, Cara and Ian Wright on Sky on Monday Night Football, and they did a bit of analysis on that corner, and they showed the different setup that we have for an in-swinging corner and an out-swinging corner, and they went back to the Brentford game, and they showed Van Dijk when the corner taker goes over and they realise it's an out-swinger, and they push out to the edge of the 6-yard box, which they did yesterday. And then they showed you the in-swinger where they drop back to basically the goal line because the ball's going to be coming in at that angle. And if you look, watch it back, as soon as Van Dijk realises who's taking the corner, he pushes the defence out, but McAllister doesn't go. He stays back because there's obviously a man behind him. And he gets fouled. It's simple as he gets fouled. But, you know, fair play to De Bruyne for picking up the ball. And you're right, the start of the game, City were on top. I think it was one of the calmest I've ever been in Anfield yesterday. I don't know why. I just didn't think we were going to lose for the whole game. But then when we conceded, when we did, I thought, oh Christ, this could take the wind out of us, because we had started to get a grip of the game. So the goal did come a little bit against the run of play. But I thought after the City goal, they had one, what I class as like a half chance, but nothing really else. And I thought we weathered the storm really well. And I thought it didn't take us long to gain control again. And yeah, fair play to them. It didn't take us long, and we were there after the goal. I know a lot of people have said City had the best of the first half, and they did. But I thought after the goal, actually, we were the better team until half time.
Yeah, Tom. So I know you were unable to go to the game yesterday with your continued recovery from your knee surgery. What did you make of their goal watching it on TV? Did you think the same as Ben, that it was a foul on McAllister? Didn't you really notice it? Did they highlight it on the television at all? And it was a real body blow, wasn't it, Tom?
Very much so, Les. I think they were talking about they'd worked on this corner in training. They've been working on it. It's someone who is a Famos who works, who's in the City backroom staff. He's the fella that they give the credit to. They've been working on it on for this game. And, you know, it worked. As Ben said, we got caught cold. It really was a foul. He played them, didn't he? But again, it was never going to go our way. That I didn't expect it to go our way. He just said he was too strong for him, which he pushed him out the way. But like you, I couldn't understand how it had gone. And I thought, even on the TV, it looked like it had gone, you know, round the side net, and you couldn't see it. And so only when you see it, Kelleher was really unlucky. He really was unlucky. Was the smallest gap, and he got his hand to it. You know, like he got across quite quick. It was just unfortunate for him. But sometimes you'd have to say, you know, it was a well worked goal, and he got away with a little bit of luck that they didn't get a foul, and they took it, and that's it. But what I thought from Liverpool, I was shocked after that, because I think that galvanised Liverpool. And I think Liverpool, from that moment on, I think Liverpool started to create chances. We started to look dangerous. I think we started to press quicker. We Endo, McAllister and St. Bosley were really pressing hard. Harvey Elliott was dropping back and pressing. And I think Nunes was leading from the front as well. And even Diaz was running and chasing back. So all of a sudden, we started to look more like ourselves. And I think, and funny enough, as it finished, I think for the end of the first half, if I'm not mistaken, I think we had 56% to City's 44. And that was the first time you said at half time that a City side had less possession than another side, or it was only the second time in the history. So I think Liverpool come back into the game and done really well. I thought, you know, like the Szoboszlai header, I thought was unbelievable and really unlucky. At that moment, I must admit, I was saying, I wish it would have been Nunes who was heading the ball at that stage. But fair play to Szoboszlai. He did find the space, and it was a lovely cross, and we were unlucky. But you know what? I thought Liverpool, and like Ben, I was thinking to myself, you know what? We're playing well here. And like, I think the scoreline, although for the domination they'd had in the early 12, 15 minutes and the chances that they created, I thought Liverpool were a better side, you know?
Yeah, Peter, I thought the catalyst for Liverpool was, as you mentioned before, was when Conor Bradley got at Nathan Ake, and Nathan Ake couldn't handle him. Mm. And all of a sudden, Liverpool's seen their sort of Achilles heel, if you want to call it that. And they kept trying to get down his side, and Bradley did him again just before half-time. And I think he should have had a shot, but he pulled it back into a lovely area around about the penalty spot. And there was no Liverpool player there. They'd all gone in. And if a Liverpool player had been running onto that, he'd have just had all the goal to aim at. But as Thompson mentioned there was the supposedly Aieta. And I just thought that Liverpool were really unfortunate to go in at the interval one down.
Yeah, there was a chance or a half chance that Luis Diaz created himself, and he fizzed the shot just wide of the post. And then I think just before half-time, we had a free kick. Szoboszlai took, and it was a bit of a daisy cutter, to be honest, but he made the keeper, you know, go down and make a save. So you could see we were starting to create chances or create openings. And the thing I always say to myself, and I said it to the lad next to me in the first half, is how many times this season have we gone behind, but we always find a way. And you just had to believe. And you're up against a good side, and you've got to give them credit for that. I just thought the way we fought back, especially after the goal, which in fairness was very, very clever what they did. It was a clever goal. And for De Bruyne, I mean, it was the only place De Bruyne could have put the ball, in fairness. For John Stones, it had to be on, you know, literally on a sixpence, and it was. And I think you could say that McAllister was foul, but how often do you see grappling going on in the box that doesn't go punished? So I think I've heard people saying, you know, if it's your space, you don't have to move. You can block whoever you want. And you see that more and more in games. I mean, Chelsea were masters at it when they were at the pump. John Terry had come up for a corner and he wouldn't even look at which way the corner was being taken. He'd be looking with his back to the corner taken because he was a blocker. And it's happening so much. So I think you have to give credit to someone at City, like you say, the coach they've been working on, and they saw like a little chink there and everything just worked for them. But yeah, towards the end of half time, first half, we were creating openings. There was the header, as I say, the shot by Luis Diaz and the free kick. And I wasn't too despondent at half time, but I just said, we've got to keep this momentum going. As soon as we come out second half, let's get straight back into them. And that's what it proved to be like.
Ben, you know what? Half time comes, we're one down. And like you, I don't know about people around you in the cup, but people by me weren't that despondent. They thought the team had played really well in the first half, despite the number of people we were without. And they were confident that Liverpool could get back in the game and at the start of the second half. And, you know, it was quite right, I think, that Jürgen didn't change the team or make any half-time changes as such. I mean, some people were thinking that Salah might come on because we were a goal down. But I think that Jürgen did the right thing to keep the same 11 on the field to start the second half. And we started the second half, and not long after half-time, we got the equalising goal. It was a pass from Kwanzaa over the top, really, that wasn't dealt with properly by Aki, who tried to play it back to the keeper. And Nunes anticipated it brilliantly and got taken out by Ederson. Now, I know there's the double jeopardy rule, but I thought the tackle in itself, if you think, forget about the double jeopardy rule for a minute, I thought the tackle itself warranted at least the consideration of a red card because of what actually happened. It was I'd seen just before I left for the game, John McGinn gets sent off for a very similar type of thing. A tackle, against the Undoggy for in the Villa Spurs game. And I thought that was a very similar thing, a swing of the foot by the goalkeeper that takes Nunes about, you know, round about his thigh. So whether it was I can understand them saying, well, the ball was going away from the goal, so it wasn't a goal scoring opportunity. But what about the recklessness in the challenge anyway? And, you know, rightly, you know, Michael Oliver pointed to the spot. There was a delay where Ederson got treatment. And I was just relieved that it was McAllister taking the penalty and not Salah. And sure enough, you know, as I said the other night, McAllister looks like he's a penalty taker and not a player who takes penalties. And he stuck it away lovely, Ben, to give us a deserved equaliser.
Yeah, I don't agree with you that Ederson should have been sent off. I was screaming for it in the cop yesterday, and my dad was like, it's not a sending off because of the double jeopardy rule. And I was like, I don't care, it's send them off anyway. But I don't think it's sending off, and I don't think it's like the John McGinn tackle either. The John McGinn one was premeditated. He knew what he was doing. Ederson was, in the moment, I think, going for the ball. He just didn't have a chance to get it. So I think a yellow card was probably the right decision. No, I think it is the right decision. when he was down injured, I said to my dad, I said, he's not injured there. Like, he's doing this tactically to try and put McAllister or whoever was taking the penalty off. But fair play to McAllister. I don't know if you noticed, but he didn't start. He stood with the ball, but not anywhere near the penalty spot. He was over to the main stand, to Pete's side of the pitch, and just minding his own business. And it was about 2.5 minutes, wasn't it, before he took it. And it was a cracking penalty. The keeper went the right way, but he was never getting to it. It was hit with a decent amount of power, thank God. But we came out in the second half, and I must admit, when it was on the concourse and the cop at half time, I said, 55 minutes, Robbo and Salah will come on here. And I said, we'll drop Elliot back. So, you know, I must have got that right. But like you, I didn't think he'd do it at half time. I thought he'd give the lads a bit more time just to stamp themselves again, because it wasn't like we were playing poorly. We played really well. We're playing one of, if not the best teams in Europe. I'm loath to say that about them because, you know, they've cheated to get there. But they are a good team. You can't deny that. Guardiola's a good manager. I know he goes to teams where he can buy whoever he wants, but he is a good manager. And I think Jürgen respected that and thought, actually, I'll give them a little bit longer to make the mark in the game. And he was proven right. Nunes did really well for the penalty. He was frustrating the life out of me in the first half. He played well, but he was offside so many times. But he did really well. And for the penalty, he was brilliant for that. I think it would have been interesting if... You say it's not a goal-scoring opportunity, but I think it was. Like, I think he would have had a good chance there if Edison wouldn't have took him out to actually score the goal. So that definition of a goal-scoring opportunity is a bit arbitrary, really. But no, McAllister took it well. I agree with you entirely. He should be the club penalty taker now. I know that Mo Salah will probably take the next one if he's on the pitch. But if I was the manager, I would be saying Alexis McAllister is our penalty taker. End of.
Tom, what did you make of it from your vantage point in front of the TV?
I thought it was the right decision, Les. I don't think he was ever going to get sent off, even though it was a haymaker of a kick. I think Nunes was always clear of it. He wasn't like he made contact with him. Nunes was put off by him, like, and he took him out of the game. But would not. I think the yellow card was a fair, and a penalty was a fair decision, to be honest. And I like the lads. I thought McAllister's penalty was sensational. I thought it reminded me of Steven Gerrard. You know, when Steven Gerrard used to take a pen, sometimes he did it into the corner or high enough up for the keeper not to be able to make up the distance. I thought it was a brilliant penalty. And like Ben said, I think for him to be standing there for 2.5 minutes, and I like Ben thought that he was acting the goat, to be honest. But as it turned out, he wasn't. He was injured. But I thought he was a brilliant pen. And then it changed. That really lit the fuse. I think that you could hear the crowd, although I thought the crowd was brilliant all the way through the first half, that sort of gave them belief, didn't it, from that moment on. And Liverpool just sort of went up another gear, which was surprising, which I thought was brilliant. You know, so I think that turned out to be a catalyst for us to sort of dictate the game in the second half. I thought the midfield, even with Szoboszlai, which I know he wasn't anywhere near full fitness, but like he pressed hard. Like I said before, Endo and McAllister, Jesus almighty, he pressed consistently all the way through the game. You know, I thought they were brilliant. And I have young Harvey Elliott. Like Ben, I think Nunes does frustrate you with his getting offside, but do you know what? He must be the hardest player in the league to play against. He's a nightmare. Same with Diaz, who was running from the sides. I know we're going to go in a minute to you know what happened with him. But, you know, all the way through the game, he was a threat. He was, you know, like he grafted all the way through the game. So, like, there was so many positives at that stage. You felt like Liverpool were really going to push on and take the win.
Pete, it wasn't long after that that Ederson was replaced in goal for City, and Liverpool brought on Robbo and Mo and took off Conor Bradley and Szoboszlai. I think Szoboszlai was more so because of his lack of fitness, and Liverpool didn't want to take the risk of pushing him too hard, you know, and risking a recurrence of his injury. So they're building up his minutes slowly. And again, you know, Mo coming on and Harvey moving back. So what did you make first of all? I'll let you have your thoughts on McAllister's penalty. And then what did you think of the Liverpool changes after about 60 minutes?
I thought it was a fantastic penalty. We were side onto it. I'm sort of level with the penalty spots. About halfway up the first tier of the main stand, and he just buried it into that corner. Like you said, I think it was Tom who said it's like Gerrard-esque, because he used to pass it into. They always say if you hit the side netting on a penalty, no keeper's going to get near it. And it's a fantastic penalty. I probably agree with the lads where I think to send the keeper off would have been harsh. I think it was the lad behind me was screaming, and I turned around and said, it's a double jeopardy thing that they have. Unless he's actually maimed someone, they're not going to send a goalkeeper off unless it's, you know, it's a real nasty premeditated foul. And I think they were right, the lads were right in saying he did make a genuine attempt to get there, but Nunes was too quick for it. But the penalty was fantastic, and it came at the right time as well. I think if we'd have gone 10 or 15 minutes without an equaliser, I think, you know, there might have been a little bit of murmuring from the crowd thinking we're not going to do this, but it just came at exactly the right time, you know, just after half time. And it just gave us more of a boost than we had coming out. And from then on, it was pretty much one-way traffic for a while. Like you say, I think we touched on the Luis Diaz miss where there was the ball that came through and he just hit it wide of the post, the wrong side of the post.
I haven't seen it back. It was a great ball from Mo.
Yeah.
But I think it was Mo Salah's first touch, actually, not long after he'd come on. And he played a lovely ball through. And I don't think it went just wide, or certainly not from my vantage point in the cop. And maybe I'm doing, you know, Louis a little bit of a disservice, but I thought it was miles wide. And I don't...
It was
miles wide.
Yeah, I haven't, in fairness, I haven't seen a rerun of it. I haven't seen the game since.
I thought you could see
what he was trying to do. He was obviously having to bend it past the keeper. That was the first obstacle. But he had to bend it past the keeper and then try and keep it inside the post, and it wasn't to be. But I thought, you know, we'll go on to player of the match later, but I thought Luis Diaz is finishing the pass. I thought he was fantastic yesterday. There were a couple of times in that second half he had Walker up his own backside a couple of times. He was just running him ragged, you know.
Yeah. Ben, it was a poor miss by Louis. You can't sugarcoat it in any way. You know, I mean, he had all the options in the world there, because it was the new goalkeeper who'd come on. He had loads of space. He even had loads of space where he could have took it round the keeper and slotted in. I think he took it too early. You know, hindsight's a wonderful thing. But to not even hit the target or make the keeper, you know, make a save, I thought it was really poor finishing for a player of his quality and ability.
It was, but his finishing's not good, is it? Let's not beat around the bush here. I know he gets a decent amount of goals, but he's not a good finisher. His goals seem to be like quite close to the goal. It was a shocking finish, that. And it wasn't his only one. Like, he did play well yesterday, but his end product was poor. And he's one of those frustrating players. I bumped into Salty at half-time, and he wasn't happy with Diaz for his end product, but hey-ho. It wasn't even close. He did. I don't know if it bobbled or not, but it did go miles wide. I think I think he probably had too much time. I think you're alluding to it. To not work the keeper there is criminal. I don't want to be too harsh on him, but it was. And it wasn't, he had another one. He could have rectified it like about 30 seconds later. Yeah. Just to go back a little bit, it was a brilliant ball from Mo. That part of his game is so underrated. Like, I remember when he first came and everyone was saying he's a one season wonder, all he does is score goals. But his all round game is absolutely fantastic. Now, that he's done a few of these through balls recently, and the weight of them is just perfect. And it was just like first or second touch in the game. It was a brilliant through ball and it deserved a good finish. But yeah, Diaz, about 30 seconds later, had another opportunity and then another one. He had three in the space of about 5 minutes. One where he didn't control it, and the other one, he just didn't do good enough on it. But all round, he did play well yesterday. It was one of his better performances. There was one in the second half when he was running at two, and he put Walker on his arse. He twisted and turned him so many times. It was brilliant to see. And he was unlucky with the cross. I think it hit the City player on the chest and went off for a corner. And then he just lied on the floor because he was shattered. He's a good player. He just needs a bit more composure in front of goal.
Tom, what did you make of the Luis Diaz miss? I mean, you know, I haven't seen it back. I'm only recalling it from what I've seen from my vantage point on the cop. But was it as wide as I thought it was?
I don't think it was as wide as you thought it was, Les. I think it was wide. It was a bad miss by it. But you know what? I'm a thingy with Luis Diaz. I think the problem for him is he's come in and he's come into Sadio Mane's position. I'm not going to defend him because we bought him, and I've seen enough of him playing for Porto against Liverpool to know that he ripped us apart when he played, but he never finished the chances that he took. I don't think he is a Sadio Mane where he's going to score you 18, 20 goals. I don't think he's that type of player. But by his standards and by his quality, he should have put that away. I think Ben's a little bit harsh on the second one because I think the ball to him was behind him, to be fair. And that was always going to be difficult to try and control it when the ball's behind you. If they'd been in front of him, I think he would have had a much better chance for the second one. But the first one was, by anybody's standards, I thought he should have scored. I was disappointed that he missed. And that would, you know, from that point of view, you look back and say, well, you know, that was a key moment for us to turn the game. But, you know, overall, I'm a bit disappointed with that. But he's a funny player, isn't he, Diaz? I think the way we set up, as what we were saying earlier on, with our five attackers, we've gone away from where we had like a phenomenal scorer like Mo Salah, who was scoring 30 odd goals. Mo still get you 20 plus, but the others weigh in with 18s and 16s and 15s. So I think from that point of view, but it was I was disappointed he missed, to be fair, Les. I can't defend him for his miss.
Yeah, Pete, and then, you know, not long after, I think with about 15 minutes ago, we replaced Nunes with Gakpo, which is a substitution, and in hindsight, again, I didn't think it worked, but again, it could have been that Jürgen was having to protect Nunes a little bit for the fact that he'd been out injured, and they were upping his minutes, and to give him 75 minutes, I think they thought maybe that was enough for him. Maybe that was something that he was told by the medical staff, but I think that once Nunes went off, we lost the ability to get him behind them, and they were finding it a little bit easier to defend because Gakpo was dropping deep, and when he was dropping deep, there was, you know, Mo was there to run him behind. There was an opportunity where Mo went down in the box and got nothing. I can't tell you what I thought because we're at the other end. Kwanzaa had a shot that the keeper seemed to make a meal of. There was a lot of little bits and pieces. Keller have made a great save from Foden. And also, there was one where Foden actually punched the ball, and the referee gave a free kick to Liverpool. The one that bounced up and hit the bar when Kelleher come flying out. And then Doku hit the inside of the post, which I actually thought was in. It comes back out and goes into the arms of Kelleher. When that happens, you think, just could this be our day?
Yeah, we did lose a bit of emphasis when Nunes went off, but just turning back a bit, I know he got caught offside quite a few times yesterday, but I don't think it's always his fault, you know. I think sometimes we were slow to release the ball from midfield. He does make these runs that might infuriate you because he runs offside. But if you look at him, there's times he's arcing his run to beat the offside trap, and we just delay that through ball. And then by the time it comes, he's a yard offside and that. But yeah, we when he went off, he looked a bit obsessed actually coming off. So
yeah,
whether it was preordained or whether it was just something that Klopp thought it'd be better to do. But I thought Gakpo struggled really to get into the pace of the game. He didn't really make much of an impression. But in saying that, I said to our Jack, I said, he'll score the winner now because he's not doing anything. He'll probably end up scoring the winner in like the 95th minute. And I think he did have a chance, although I think by the time he decided what to do with it, they smothered him and got the ball away. But yeah, and then, like you say, Kelleher comes out to clear a cross and it hits Foden on the head and comes off the crossbar. And then
it was on ball, Pete. It was on ball.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, yeah. The referee gave on ball, yeah.
Ah, right, yeah. Okay.
He did like his fist by his
Who on balled it, Les?
Both.
Did he?
All right.
I never knew that.
I thought it just got punched onto his head. He made a good save before that, Kelleher. I'm not sure if it was Foden again on the right side.
He made his
customary, excellent save that he does at least one in every game. And then I was a bit like you when Doko hit that shot. I thought, oh, it's in. And it was like the 90th minute then. And I thought that'll kill us if it goes in. And then luckily it comes back off the post straight into Keller's arms. And then I think they put 8 minutes up of injury time, didn't they? So yeah, there was still a lot to play for then. And then we just seemed to get like a bit of second wind, and we started having a really good go in the injury time. And you could tell with City, some of the City players were dead on the feet. I don't think they've had a game like that, certainly in the Premier League this season, where they were the ones who were waiting for the final whistle because you could tell some of them were shot, you know. But, go on.
Did you notice on the TV that was on ball by Foden?
Yeah, it hit him. Keller punched it. It hit him on the head, Les, and then he had his arm up and he put it onto his arm and it went straight onto the bar. So he gave it for on ball. He said he'd on balled it. But I bottled it. I was going to say I shit myself, but I really... I thought he deaded it in first, and then I seen it in his hand, and then I thought, well, even if it goes in, like if it had gone in, he'd have disallowed it. But he did. Oliver had pointed to his hand.
Was it deliberate on ball, Tom?
I don't think it does make any difference. I'm just asking
why he wasn't booked.
I don't think it was deliberate on ball, Ben, because it happened that quick. I think it shot up, but he had his hand up.
Right.
I don't know if he had his hand up to protect himself because Keller was diving out.
Right.
And he had his hand up. But it had come off his head and onto his hand and onto the bar.
Yeah.
But
then obviously I wanted to come to you first on this one because you've obviously got the best view of it, and probably Pete has as well, from where you've at, I couldn't say this detail on the cop, and I don't know whether Ben could, but the penalty incident with McAllister. So go on, I'll just leave you
Do you know what? When I seen it first, I thought, and Oliver, I couldn't understand. I can understand to a certain extent. I think Oliver, I think seeing it, it was 97, 98 minutes, and then it was a consensus shout for the when it got up. He knew that Doku had made contact with McAllister. He's tried to say that he made contact with the ball first, and then everyone started to slow it down. So he slowed it down about 10 times. And Mike Dean said, "This is a penalty." He said, "This is a penalty." He said, and then all of them was looking at it, and it didn't. I sent you the video, didn't I, last night, of the ball. The ball spins off McAllister's chest and onto Doku's foot. So he actually didn't, and then his foot goes through and hits McAllister in the chest. It's, as Klopp said, anywhere on the pitch, that's a free kick. That's a free kick, and it's a booking at best. And do you know, it's so frustrating. I said that Oliver bottled it. Well, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt and then just say that he didn't. But to have a 20-second look at it on VAR, that's the thing I find absolutely crazy from Atwell. Because this is my bugbear, and this is like my hatred of VAR, and like what the thing about it, and how I think it's ruining the game. Immaterial of, and I said this the last time I was on, immaterial of when a decision like that happens, Oliver should go to the screen and look at the screen. He shouldn't have to be told by VAR that you've made an error. Do you know, you should know by the players laying on the floor, you know that he's hurt. All the players are screaming. Everyone knows he's seen his foot hit him in the chest. So he knows he's made contact with him. So why doesn't he then go to the screen himself and have a look at it? Why does Atwell have to make that decision for him? Do you know
because
what I mean?
What according to David this afternoon, when I was watching Ref Watch while I was on my lunch, right, David says that Michael Oliver relays to Atwell of VAR that he reckons that the ball is being played by Doku, right?
Yeah.
So that's what he's saying, right? So then, because there's this get out of jail free card of, is it a clear and obvious error? Well, Atwell then says, see the ball touches the boot of Doku and says, well, yeah, he could have possibly played the ball, so it's not a clear and obvious error. So, I'm not going to overturn the decision. Now, this is where the whole thing comes in. Clear and obvious is just a basic. Yeah, exactly. It is. It's just a nonsense. So it should be, is that decision right or is that decision wrong? Now, hold on. Now, let us sort of delve back a little bit here. Curtis Jones got sent off. He actually played the ball. His foot is nowhere near as high as what Doku's foot is, right? Mm. So is that not dangerous play as well when you get somebody sort of around the chest area because your foot shouldn't be up that high anyway? You know what I mean? Plus he's leading with his studs. So for me, it's 100% a penalty. Now, I just want to come back on you before I move to Ben and Pete on this. And I just want to relate something back to you, Tom. And I just want to get your view on there. You just said there that Oliver didn't bottle it. Well, I want to give you a couple of examples here, and there's more than a couple. Oliver refereed Manchester City v Fulham at the Etihad, right? Sorry, I should have said the 115 as v Fulham then, sorry. There's a player standing in front of the goalkeeper. The 115 is score. Oliver gives the goal. VAR, look at it. And decide it's not a clear and obvious error, and the goal stands. Oliver is refereeing Arsenal v Manchester City, Arsenal v the 115ers at the Emirates. Kovacic does a worse tackle than what Curtis Jones does. Just gives him a yellow card. 2 minutes later, he does another bad tackle. Doesn't even book him. Then, you know, he's refereeing Manchester United v. the 115 is at Old Trafford. How many times do you see a tug on the shirt in the box that doesn't get given? Oliver gives it. Penalty to Manchester City. Sorry, penalty to the 115 is. They benefit again. And finally, yesterday, last minute, there's a penalty incident against the 115ers. Clear the penalty, you can see. Oliver doesn't give it. Is that a coincidence, Tom?
There's another thing, you know, just before Tom comes in. Sorry, Tom.
No, you go, Ben.
He was one of the referees to go to the Middle East.
Yeah.
I was just gonna say that, you know, Ben. I think, do you know, I tweeted angrily today about the PGML. I said, you know what, it's now getting, you've got a situation where these referees under Howard Webb's watch are going and doing sorties and getting paid exorbitant amounts of money by people who've got shares in Manchester City and Newcastle. And that can't be right. That genuinely can't be right. And they're getting much more than they would be paid in the Premier League. So you ask yourself, why then are they doing that, Les? You say to yourself, why? And what are they paying for? Because it brings into question, doesn't it? You know, dubious means. It's like, so you begin to ask yourself, is the PGML incompetent, corrupt, or did you just bias to against Liverpool because they've cost us 7 points this season?
I don't think they are biased just against Liverpool because you just watch them week in, week out. I mean, I was watching Ref Watch today while we're just on the subject of this, of the PGMOL, and Michael Salisbury is the referee between Brighton and Notts Forest yesterday. And honest to God, you should have seen the tackle on Nico Williams. The Brighton fella runs at him at pace, jumps at him two-footed and takes him above the ankle. Right, the ball's nowhere near. And he just gets a yellow card and VAR said that was okay. And it's the honest to God, Tom, it's the worst tackle I've seen this season.
Well, then, are they incompetent then? Or are they corrupt?
They're incompetent. They're totally and utterly incompetent.
Do you know, and I can understand why Jürgen Klopp has had enough. I really genuinely can. Do you know what? It must be soul destroying, must it? I'm lost for words, to be honest, for the first time in my life.
But what I'll say to you, Tom, if you turn the clock back to this time last week, you had Mike Dean standing on Sunday Football saying that what our friend Paul Tierney did by awarding a drop ball incorrectly was, you know, a major fuck up basically.
Yeah.
Yet nobody's talking about this, and yet, you know, the drop ball. Forrest had possession twice after that to enable them, you know, but that's a major fuck up. But this one, which you know, could ultimately decide the destination of the title, you know, wasn't a fuck up. You know what I mean? It's just incompetence, Ben. So we'll just move to you and ask you what you thought of it, Ben.
Thought of what, Les? Sorry, the penalty.
The whole thing, the penalty, the fallout from it and everything.
Right, so obviously in my view at the match, I didn't see it, genuinely didn't see it. I just saw McAllister down. I had no idea why he was down. So I've seen it back. And you think, I genuinely don't want to believe in anything to do with corruption or people giving teams, not giving teams decisions or anything like that. But I know the referees are crap, and I can understand the referee not realizing how bad it is on the pitch, but for VAR to look at it for 20 seconds or however long it was and think, yeah, you know what, it's not a penalty. I don't think, I'm still not 100% convinced he actually wins the ball. I'm pretty convinced him and McAllister touched the ball very, very simultaneously.
It is his chest bend first. The spin of the ball shows you it's his chest. And when he had the ball, he deflects the ball onto his foot. The ball flies up. But his foot is then stamped into his chest.
The point is, it doesn't, if he wins the ball or not, it's absolutely irrelevant. Like when Sadio Mane got sent off against City 5 years ago against Edison, I don't think anyone would have argued with that being sent off. But he won the ball first and then clobbered Edison in the head. But it was no higher than Doku's yesterday. It was just Edison was going down to try and head it. The inconsistency is just baffling. And when it went to VAR, I hadn't seen it, but I never expected them to give it. Like, you just don't, do you? The timing of it would have been an absolutely monumental call from the referee. But I think it was Tom that said it, or I think it was anyway. But the referee at that point should be a mandatory thing to go and look at it, because we all know individual referees see different instances in different ways. And the referee on the pitch should have the final decision, so he should be made to look at it and make his mind up. But like, I think it was Tom again that said it, we've cost 7 points this season. And the hoo-ha last week against Forest for the referee making the incorrect decision, and then 2 minutes later, Liverpool score a goal when Nottingham Forest had touched the ball 3 times prior. There was a lot more of that than this. And this is a Stonewall penalty. And I know that we're not the only team to be done by horrific decisions. A couple of, I can think off the top of my head, Nottingham Forest and Wolves have been really hard done by as well. But this might well have happened, and I could look like an idiot for saying it, but can you think of any decisions that Man City have had this year that they shouldn't have? I can't think of any. I genuinely can't think of any. Like, so the referees getting paid to go to the Middle East by companies with ownership issues or links to ownerships of clubs shouldn't be allowed. The referees are employed by the Premier League. Their contract should state that's all they do. You're employed to do one job. They shouldn't be able to do foreigners or, you know, jobs for other companies. It should be in the contract. It's ludicrous for them to do anything else. But having seen that decision yesterday, it was just baffling. I genuinely can't understand how you can kick someone in the chest, regardless of if you win the ball or not, and it not to be a foul. But ultimately, Les, I think a draw probably was a fair result. The second half was brilliant. It was great to be at Anfield yesterday. The atmosphere was one of the best league games I've ever been to. I think the Annie Road ends made a big difference. You know, there was a few times in the second half where you could rarely hear the atmosphere. You could never hear it before. And I think just having the ground not as lopsided as it was with a smaller Annie Road end, it really keeps the sound in, and it funnels the sound down to the pitch really well. And even going back to the start of the game, for You Never Walk Alone, just seeing all the red scarves in the Annie Road end, it's great. It really is great. And the second half could have, we were the best team. It was one of the best, I think it probably was the best we played this season, you know, and for the whole game, actually. It was a really impressive. But they had their moments in the second half. I didn't realise the Phil Foden one was handball. But that Doku chance, I thought, shit, that's in. You know, it was just after everything, I thought, and it bounced back kindly. But we earned that luck. We'd earned it. And Diaz missed a couple of chances. I think the only thing Jürgen got wrong yesterday was the substitution of Gakpo. I just didn't think that worked. But hey-ho, you can't win them all, can you? And
Pete, sorry, Ben.
No, that was, I was about to say, it was a privilege to be at Anfield yesterday, Les.
Pete, can I just ask you for your opinion from your seat with the main stand ultras of the penalty decision? You must have had apart from Tom, who was sat at home, you know, in front of his TV, and he sort of proved the point, really. And I know he's got red tinted glasses on to a degree, but he's sitting there in front of a TV and he can see that that's a penalty. Yet an elite official sitting in front of a TV in Stockley Park can see it's not a penalty. So what was your view with the main stand ultras then, Pete? Because that's right down your end, isn't it?
It was literally right opposite where I was, well, not sitting at the time. We were all standing up at the time. It was a nailed-on penalty, Les. I don't care what you say, and I do think the referee and Atwell, as his assistant or VAR, whatever you want to call him, I think he bottled it because of the... Someone said a couple of rows behind, well, he's not going to give two penalties, is he, in one match? And I said, friggin' Man United got two against Everton. If it's a foul, it's a foul, end of. And I just think he did bottle it. I really did. I thought it was an atrocious decision. And it was also an atrocious decision that VAR didn't at least, like you say, you've got to have a look at this. Because I've been trying to rack my brains. I mean, Quansah gave a penalty away at Crystal Palace for less. Remember, Robbo got penalised, was it at Brighton 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah.
And it was less than that. And I know it wasn't the same referee. I know it wasn't Oliver. But I don't know. It's just, you're coming out the ground shaking your head and you're thinking, what have you got to do? The first one, I mean, you know, Stevie Wonder could have given the first one. That was a penalty all ends up. But this was just as bad. I mean, you can't raise your foot. Remember McAllister, although it was rescinded earlier on in the season, McAllister went off for going in for a 50-50 tackle, and his foot was a foot off the ground. Once you raise your foot in any part of the pitch and make contact with a player, it's a foul. Just because you're inside a penalty box doesn't mean, oh, I can't give this, I can't give... I just thought it was a complete bottle job by the officials, I really did. And I was, as you can tell, I'm not very happy about it. I just thought that Oliver bottled it, and he should have been backed up by his VAR, by his assistants and everything. And instead, they just all closed ranks and said, no, carry on, because it was in the 98th minute or something like that. And I just thought it was atrocious. I thought it was terrible refereeing.
Just a one-word answer to this. Had the referee give a penalty, right, who would you have wanted to take the penalty, Tom?
Oh, McAllister. But I think that was a great question, Les.
Ben?
Oh, McAllister.
Pete?
Yeah, McAllister.
That's a full house for McAllister.
Who do you think would have took it, Les?
Salah.
I think Salah would have took it.
Yeah, 100%. And I wouldn't have been overly confident. If McAllister had picked the ball up and spotted it, I'd have thought we got the 3 points easier.
Yeah.
The only reason why I think he might not have took it was the injury, you know.
But I don't think he was that injured that he wouldn't have been able to take the penalty.
No, I know, Les, but if you get booted in the chest,
Even with the injury, though, Ben, I'd still prefer him to take it than Mo. You know, I just want to say something here before I ask you for your player of the match. And I've been going to Anfield now and not missed a home game, touch wood, since 1976, as you all know, and I've been going before then. And as a game of football between two teams, that is the best game of football I've ever seen at Anfield in terms of the pace of the game, two really good teams going toe-to-toe with each other, nobody giving an inch. And as Ben said before, it was a privilege to be there. And the one pity I've got about all this is that's the finest game of football I've seen. And because what happened in the 98th or the 99th minute, the focus has gone away from that and gone on to the referees again, which you should never and ever do. So on that note, I'll go to Tom first and say, who was your player of the match?
This is the hardest decision ever, this, Les, I think, because I thought Van Dijk was immense. He was just, as we've said for ages, I think Harvey Elliott run himself into the ground. I thought he was brilliant. I thought Nunes, Diaz, Everybody worked really hard. I thought Endo gave the best performance, and on the way that he played the game and the way that he mastered De Bruyne and the way that, you know, like aided by McAllister, I was to-ing and fro-ing between the two, but I've got to give it to McAllister. I think this lad is proper quality. He is him, and he's got this same length, this link with Nunes and Diaz. And I just think McAllister, I thought McAllister less. I give it to McAllister.
Ben, you're next up. Who are you going for?
I agree with Tom. McAllister, I think there was an argument for, I'd say, about 8 Liverpool players yesterday to be man of the match. You could have easily convinced me or twisted my arm on most of them, but I just thought McAllister, he took the penalty brilliantly, should have won a penalty to win it. Who knows, he could have scored the winner as well. I thought he's just a majestic footballer. He's so calm, he makes everything look easy, he's never pressurised. He's, like I said last week, I feel like we've absolutely robbed Brighton.
Pete, who are you going for?
Well, I've probably got all the names that the two lads have just mentioned, and I've noted these down before we started. Van Dijk, Kwanzaa, those Endo was fantastic. Nunes, for all his failings of being offside, was immense until he came off. Diaz, although his finishing was bad, I thought he was... I've never seen anyone trouble Walker so much. I think Elliot was about 6'8" a month ago, and he's run that much. He's honestly, God, that lad, the last few games he's played, Elliot, you've had to peel him off the pitch. Yeah. He's been fantastic. But I can only agree with the lads. I thought McAllister was brilliant. Him and Endo in tandem. Like you say, Szoboszlai didn't have the best of games. But Endo and Szoboszlai, Endo and Maka, it was a toss-up for me. But I think Maka just wins it for the coolness of the penalty and the way he drove us on in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, I think you've covered everybody there
I don't think Pete did, you know. Sorry to butt in, Les. Gomez, he was really good yesterday. Yeah. And Kwanzaa.
And he played in two positions again, Ben. Gomez.
Again, you know, I thought Kelleher did all that was out of him. Needed. Yeah. I thought Conor Bradley was immense while he was on the field as well. So it was a really difficult choice. And in the end, for me, it come down to two players, Harvey Elliott or McAllister. And like you lads, you know, the more I think about it, I can't go away from McAllister. He is absolutely just going to another level as a Liverpool player. And you turn the clock back to that game away at Wolves when people doubted him after he played at altitude and got taken off at half time. And now look at the levels that he's reached. He is just an immense footballer. He's a class act. And he could be the catalyst player for Liverpool to be successful over many, many years. Mm. So McAllister for me. Just before we move on quickly, I know Peter will have had his pen and paper out. I just want to ask you, Tom, and I'll ask the lads as well, how do you see things now with 10 games to go after, you know, Liverpool have got the points at Man City? We've lost top spot on goal difference to Arsenal. But how do you see the position we're in at the minute? Are you still confident that, you know, we can do enough over the next sort of 9 or 10 weeks to bring number 20 home?
I feel more confident. I think players are going to come back, which will make the side stronger. And you know what? I had this talk with our Kevin today about it. I'll do it quickly. I said, you know what? You've got to look at our last 21 league games to judge how we're doing. And I think at our last 21 league games, we've had, I think it's 18 wins, 2 draws and a defeat. And I think I can see Liverpool winning the last 10 games. I genuinely can. I think if you get players back with the level, I think, you know what you said, a funny thing? You just said a funny thing about what I was saying. No, I'd never have thought I'd have a midfield where I'm talking about. Szoboszlai, Endo, you got, you know, Bacetti, Curtis, Gravenberch, Harvey Elliott to come. And then you've got Trent, because he's not going to go to the fullback position. So you're going to be loaded with midfield quality. So I genuinely, I think we'll win the league, Les. I thought it right from the start, so I'm not going to change. I think we'll see it out.
Pete, how do you see it? I was looking before, and to me, I'll go to you on one, I'll go to Ben on the other one. Looking at the fixtures, I think the Tottenham could be the king maker or the king breaker. We've got Tottenham at home, and both Manchester City and Arsenal. I've got to go to Tottenham. So how do you see that one? And obviously our position.
I think hand on heart with the transition that we've had this season. I think if we'd have been saying you're going to be talking early middle of March as title contenders, I think we'd have said it's a bit too. I don't think we'll do that. But the position we're in now, I think realistically, you know, 10 games left. I think we probably need to win 9 of them. I think we need to. If we can win 9 of them, we said early season, how many points do you think will win the league? And I think I said mid to high 80s. And I don't think that will be enough. I think if we can win 9 out of 10, that will take us to 91 points. And I think that might just do it for us. But, you know, another game, you know, I know we've got United away, we've got Tottenham at home. A game I'm not looking forward to is the Derby, because they will do everything they can to spoil it for us. But I honestly think, out of 10 games, we've possibly got to win 9. But it would be good if we're playing our next league game. We're playing before City and Arsenal. So if we can beat Brighton, we go back to the top of the league. And
they play,
you know,
each other, don't they?
They play each other after us, yeah. So if we can go to, if we can beat Brighton and go back to the top of the league on 67 points, that leaves pre-kickoff Arsenal 64 and City on 63. And like you say, something's got to give. Arsenal have done a lot better than I thought they would. I thought by now they'd have... I mean, the goals they scored in the last few matches, I know they sneaked a win at the weekend, but the goals they scored, albeit at Sheffield United and things like in West Ham, you know, they got sixes and fives and sixes on the travels. Their goal difference could come into play as well. But I think if we win 9 out of 10, I think we can win the league.
Ben, the other team that could be kingmaker or kingbreaker is Aston Villa. We've got to go to Villa, and Villa have got to go to both Arsenal and Manchester City. So, you know, there's a few hurdles for all the teams to get over. How do you see things at the minute?
I'm a lot less worried about Villa the last few weeks than I was a month ago. I heard on the radio on a podcast this morning, John McGinn misses the City game away, which is a big loss for them. But yeah, I'm more wary of Tottenham. I think Tottenham are going to be the ones that decide where the league goes, you know, because they're going to be right up for it against Arsenal. Is that game at Tottenham?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the City games at Tottenham.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I think I'd prefer City to be at home against Tottenham, you know. Tottenham seems to do well there. But
City have only won once at Tottenham.
Yeah, they've only scored one goal, haven't they? They scored one goal in the first time this season. But no, I think those two teams, but I think the other two teams are brilliant. I mean, Arsenal, like Pete said, I expected Arsenal to drop off by now. And they've shown signs that they were about to, but then they've got goals right at the end. And I still think out of the three teams, they are more likely to drop. And what I really hope happens is they draw each other in the Champions League.
Yeah.
I really hope that that happens, because that would be fantastic for us. Imagine if they draw each other and just kick lumps out of each other. That's
Yeah.
perfect scenario. And then we can just sit back and watch and enjoy. Because I think one of them will win the Champions League, you know. Honestly, I think that they're the two best teams left in it. So I'm not worried
Madrid
about the
will take
derby, you
some
know.
beating, Ben. Madrid will
Well,
take some beating, Real
I'm
Madrid.
going to say Madrid win it when they're not the best team in it.
They do, but
Yeah,
City
they proved that
absolutely,
against us, haven't they?
yeah, but City spanked them last season.
So, Tom, just moving on from the Champions League a minute. So, as Pete just touched on there, just before we quickly preview the game on Thursday, City playing Arsenal. I know we'd say a draw is the ideal result for us, because then we gain points on both of them. But the question I want to ask you is, if one team is to win, who would you prefer to win, City or Arsenal?
Who do I prefer to win, or who do I think will win?
So, who would you prefer to win?
Oh, I don't know. That's a hard one. I think I prefer, I don't, City to win, to be honest.
Oh,
Yeah,
yeah.
I agree with that. And I'll
No.
tell you why I agree before we come to Ben.
I'll tell you why
No.
Go on, Tom. See if
prefer.
you agree with me.
Because they're behind us on points already, and I think we're Arsenal are level with us, and I think City will drop points. I think City will drop points at Tottenham. I don't think they get nothing at Tottenham. I think Tottenham are not afraid to play Manchester City because they attack them. And I'll tell you someone else where they'll struggle. They'll struggle against Wolves, and they'll struggle against Crystal Palace, because they always do.
Yeah, I the only reason I, obviously draw, but if the only reason I would prefer City to win rather than Arsenal is that if Arsenal win, they would walk off that pitch and think, right, if we can go and win at the 115ers, we can go and win anywhere, and that could give them unbelievable confidence moving forward.
Yeah.
Pete, what do you think? City to
I was
win
gonna
or Arsenal?
say Arsenal myself, because I think if Arsenal beat City without putting City right out of it, if we can get the 3 points against Brighton, it's a bit of a gap. And like you say, I think Tottenham can do a job on Arsenal in the derby. And the longer they stay in Europe, I think they may. I mean, ideal, like Ben said, is let's hope they draw one another, you know, in the European. But probably if I had to choose one, I'd probably say Arsenal, just because I think they may have a hiccup in them. City can go on a run and win every game. They've seen that before in the seasons gone past. They can just put a run together, 12, 13 wins on the bounce. But I think if Arsenal can do them, I would probably prefer that to City winning, to be honest.
Ben, I know your answer to this, but you can give us it anyway because we've discussed this before.
Who would I?
Yeah, wanna prefer if there was going to be a winner in that game,
Yeah, obviously,
who are your choices?
I don't think any of us want any of them to win, do we? But if I had to,
Oh.
I'd much prefer City to drop points. I know City have got less points, but City have been there, done it, and broke my heart so many bloody times over the last few years. I'd much rather them out of it.
Okay, fair enough. Pete, have you got your pen and paper for Thursday?
I've got me pen and paper, but for once I haven't got a Scooby what team he's going to pick,
Right, okay.
because I think we've got to pick. We've got to still show a bit of respect to Prague. I know we're 4 goals ahead, and we've got a big cup game coming up on Sunday, so I can see some of the big guns being rested. But I think he's got to play a few players. He's got to maybe I can see Kwanzaa and probably Gomez as centre back. But then I'm thinking, well, will he play Bradley? Simikas is probably a few.
Bradley only had like 60 minutes yesterday, didn't he? So you can see Bradley probably starting.
Yeah.
I also think your Robbo will start, and I also think Virgil might start, and he might give Virgil 45 and Joe Gomez 45.
Yeah, I think if he's going to go, I think if he's going to go at all strong, if that's the right way to. You know, I think it's going to be a weakened side, but I think he's going to go strong in the first half rather than if Prague suddenly hits us with two goals and then the jitters set in. I think if we can go pretty strongish in the first half, I think Endo will probably start.
Yeah.
Probably Szoboszlai again.
He needs the games, Pete.
Sorry.
He needs the games, Szoboszlai.
He does. Yeah. And I think he might give Harvey a rest. And he might play McConnell maybe in midfield.
Or Bobby Clark.
Bobby Clark. Yeah, I think a couple of the kids, you know, the younger ones will play. Because as I say, Elias, he's put such a shift in the last month. You have to peel him off the pitch. He's spent. Up front.
Gakpo.
Yeah, Gakpo. I don't know. Is Gravenberch on the mend yet or what?
Not quite. I think Gakpo,
Salah,
and
Dans. I think Dans will start.
Is Dans back from his concussion?
He will be by then.
Yeah, he might get a game. Yeah. So I think we've got to play some frontline players. We don't want to give them any sort of encouragement. And if they get off to a flyer and have a go and certainly score two without a reply, the jitters might set in. So I think we've just got to be realistic and play a decent side, you know.
Tom, what are you going for score-wise?
I think Liverpool will win. I think Liverpool will win 3-2, Les.
Ben?
I think it really depends on the team. You know, Les, I wouldn't be surprised if we get a draw. Maybe 1-1, 2-2, something like that.
Okay, Pete?
I'll go for me standard 3-1. I think we can score. I think they may score. They showed in the first, like, they're no mugs. And if they try and... The thing is, we haven't got to go at them. So we can be twice.
They might play a weakened team as well, mightn't they? They're going for the league, aren't they?
Yeah, they're top of their league and they may not want to risk injuries and that. So it could be like that. But I think 3-1. I think we've got goals in us, definitely.
Yeah, I'll go 2-1 Liverpool. And you know, we'll safely be in the draw on Friday or whenever it takes place. On that note, we'll end this edition of the Late Flag. Thanks to Tom, Pete and Ben for joining me tonight. As I always say, justice for the 97, don't bite the sun, and you'll never walk alone. Until next time, see you soon.